Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right. And time for another installment of It's My House and DIY Housing TV. Today's live stream, we have special guest on, Tonda Thompson, owner and CEO of She Slangs Wood. So we'll be back with her just right after this.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors with these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right, we're back. And today's special guest is Tonda Thompson, and she's the CEO of She Slangs Wood. I'm going to let her tell her story, because her story, I guess, starts in during the pandemic. And apparently by my standards anyway, she was walking on Faith Street today. So, open up for a minute. Good morning, Tonda.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Fine. Well, tell us about, you're a woodworker, share with us how you got started and why you got started in woodworking.
Absolutely. So not to get into deep details, I have a long story of a very tragic story that happened to me 10 years ago. I lost my first son, Terrell, due to not so well conditions in the labor and delivery department where he was born in, due to, you know, us black women having issues of having a healthy and safe birth outcome. I lost my son due to neglect at the hospital that he was born at. You can Google my name. My name was featured in the Nation magazine quite a while ago in 2017 in the article called What's Killing Black Babies. So after losing my son, I became an advocate for healthy birth outcomes in our community. Milwaukee is known. I'm from the city of Milwaukee in Wisconsin, and we're known for having very high alarming unhealthy birth outcome rates in our city. So I became an advocate for healthy babies. Before that, I was a runway model. I was not a woodworker. I did go to a technical school here, but I had no interest in being a woodworker or anything like that. During the pandemic in 2020, I have a three-year-old son now. At that time, he was three. He stood on the table. He thought he was Mickey Mouse. The table sunk in. It was a metal table with a glass top. The table sunk in, almost shattered. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic when we were in quarantine. We did not know we were going to be alive or whatever. We did not know what COVID was. We only had two options of buying a new table. At that time, I was really big on having a coffee table in my house. I felt like you gave us foundation as a family. It was a place of gathering. We didn't have a place to go buy a table, so I went on YouTube. I was inspired by a friend here. She was a DIYer. I'm like, if she could, you know, build tables, I can too. So I went to YouTube, learned how to build a coffee table. I made a post after that about, you know, making a strong foundation in your family. Having a strong table is a strong foundation. Literally a week later, I had 10 orders of tables. 3 years, fast forward 3 years later, I am now a finished in construction carpentry. I build tables. I build fences, decks, porches, you name it. I do everything pretty much outside of the house, sheds. I also manufacture and create furniture for different people too around the city as well as across the nation. And I'm also renovating my own commercial property at this moment. So coming from not having much to renovating the spot to the business grew. The money that I sold selling tables during the pandemic, I was able to purchase a commercial building here in a black community here in our city. So I'm changing that narrative. So it basically came from me building tables in my garage to me teaching women in my community how to be confident and fit through woodworking. It's not about me anymore. I'm teaching young black women how to be carpenters. Story in a nutshell. It's a whole bunch that goes with the story, but in a nutshell, that's what it is.
Well, very, very impressive. Now, so your first de facto factory was the garage at your home then?
Yes, so I started off in my garage. Really, actually, I started in my basement.
Okay, that's even better.
Yeah, I started in the basement.
You started off in your basement, okay.
Say it again?
You started off in your basement. Now, that first table you built, you were just basically building that for yourself, then, I imagine.
Yes, because we didn't have access of going to a store to get a good quality table, so I decided to make one myself.
Okay. All right. Well, and then, you took pictures and posted it, and the following week you had, what, you said 10 orders?
Yeah, I had 10 orders within a week after the first table I made. You know, people were so big on, you know, not buying a cheap table from the store that, you know, that lasts them a couple of years. They wanted something that lasts them a lifetime. So my tables are tables that will last you probably until you pass your time here on earth.
Okay, well, generational wealth.
Yeah.
Now, all right, so your first factor of fact, okay, humble beginnings. And there's a lot of basements out here that are underutilized, but you utilize yours to make stuff. And now, what about tools that you have, if any, to start?
Can you repeat that for me? It's hard to hear you.
Yeah, well, yeah. What tools did you have? Because some people start off with maybe one tool or no tools. What tools did you have to start?
Initially, I just had a screwdriver. I'm sorry, like a drill. I had a basic comb power drill, something that didn't have that much. It didn't have that much force with it. And I would have Home Depot cut my wood, my dimensional lumber, on site. So I didn't have any saws or anything like that on site. So I really just had a drill at first, but now I have a whole building full of tools now.
Well, I imagine you do. Well, and then you also help, teenage young ladies teach, because I think statistically in the United States, 97% of the carpenters out here are men, which means 3%. And I guess when it comes to black women, you don't run it. I only know of, including you, I only know of three black female carpenters, and one of them, you're in Milwaukee. The other one that I ran across in Clubhouse, which is an audio app, is out of Pittsburgh. And then the third one, she has a similar background. She didn't know anything about carpentry. I don't know if she was watching YouTube videos. But she started to take pallets, and she's in Kenya. And now she's got about 10 employees. So, but there's not that many women, no matter what color or race, you know, at least in the United States, into that. So, but you're doing something about that. So share that with us. What are you doing to help ladies, particularly young ladies, get into?
Yes, absolutely. So I have a pipeline program from a local high school here called Bradley Tech High School, which is a technical high school here in the city of Milwaukee. So I go to that school. I'm an alumni of that school. So I go to that school, and I hire young girls who are interested in carpentry. So I give them jobs as a finished carpenter or a construction carpenter, or, you know, like rough framing and stuff like that, whatever they choose to do. And I pay them, you know, good paying dollars pretty much. And they learn pretty much everything that they would learn as an apprentice. I learned that, you know, becoming an apprentice is a good thing, but you don't have really, once you get in a program here, they really don't teach you a lot of things that they need to teach you, you know? So they kind of, you know, push us back because we are women. But with me, you learn everything that you need to learn, and you become well-equipped to start your own business through me. So I'm literally pipelining from high school to owning your own business and actually, you know, working in the field, in the trade field that you choose to work in. So I have a bunch of young women I teach. Regular classes on the weekend, ordinary people that comes in, you know, just want to have fun on the weekend. I teach women woodworking, you know, things like making a cutting board, shaping a cutting board, building a table. I teach those type of classes on the weekends here in the city of Milwaukee.
Excellent. Now, let's say you get somebody in, they're learning the technical part, the how-to part of carpentry or woodworking. Now, what about the entrepreneurial part? After they built the table or chair or bed or whatever it might be, and they want to earn money from, you know, selling what they build, what is that about that aspect of business?
I pretty much teach people, like, you know, if you build things with love and, you know, with dedication and think of it as your own piece, you know, you wouldn't just want to sell anybody, you know, anything. You wouldn't want anybody to sell you anything, you know. So basically, whatever you make it to where you will make it for yourself. But, you know, use your sales skills to sell it to other people and make people fall in love with the pieces that you make or whatever thing that you do, so that other people can fall in love with it. If you love your product the way that you should, other people will fall in love with it as well. So don't just give half, you know, have
no,
done
something. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That puts a whole different spin on it, particularly vibration-wise. Make it with love, and that love will radiate that was looking for this thing. So that's excellent advice there. Now, what about, do you have any women coming to you that, or men, doesn't matter really, that might be, because there's a lot of homeless all across the country now, and I know up in your neck, it was Milwaukee, it gets cold. So any people coming to you that they might be in a homeless situation or semi-homeless situation coming to you and saying, look, just teach me how to build something.
Mm-hmm. What I do is, so I'm the CEO of JR Creative Holdings, which is my holdings company for all of the businesses that I own. And I teach skills to eliminate social determinants of health in our community, which is homelessness, joblessness, you know, any access of not having what we need as, you know, humans. So, you know, anybody come up to me from the street, and where my building is located, it's in a neighborhood that is, you know, struggled. It's in a black neighborhood that has struggled for some time. So I'm pulling people off of the street and say, hey, you know, you might lack, but I can teach you how to provide for yourself. And this is somewhat of a self-determination type of a thing that I'm pushing. I'm teaching, I'm putting skills in people's hands they don't have to live without for the rest of their life. So, and I'm also teaching them how to have confidence in the thing that they produce as well as within their environment. Like, if you know a skill, you can change your whole entire life, your whole entire home, everything around you. So I don't teach to get praise or get money in return. I teach to help my community change their lives and their environments at the same time.
Okay. Well, with the skill sets that you have, I mean, essentially, you're in Milwaukee, but if we picked you up and dropped you off in Cape Town, South Africa, Moscow, Russia, Japan, Mongolia, you got a skill basically that it's a portable profession. That's where I'm going with it, where you can, I mean, hey, everybody in those places, they use tables, or they're going to need tables, chairs, and things of that nature. Now, if a person wanted to take advantage of you, because I know you have an educational part of your business, so how could a person tap in on that if a person
Learn this woodworking? You can contact me at any time at Tonda@SheFlamesWood.com. I do virtual classes from time to time, so I'm not just based out of, you know, the city of Milwaukee. I do travel. The work that I do, the social determinants of health, you know, work that I do is to me a national thing that I like to do across the nation. Because we have a lot of black communities just like mine that suffer from these issues of, you know, racial discrimination and joblessness and homelessness due to social determinants of health. So my work is, you know, it's all over the world. So if they need to contact me, just contact me via email. We can make something happen.
All right, well, we may have to have you come down here. I'm in Florida, and we got a group of mostly women. Hello, been about a month ago, we're doing a radio program, and let's see, 11 people came out in the rain. 9 of the 11 were women, which I was kind of surprised, but that high a number. But they were interested in learn how to build stuff, so we might have to. I'll contact you later on that.
Yes, the ladies across they are ready. Most of the women I get into my shop, they're like, hey, I always wanted to be a woodworker, but I couldn't because I was a woman. Now I have this chance to. So they're ready to do it.
Right. Let's go to the phone and see if somebody's got to ask you a question. 813 area code, anybody there? And if so, what question do you have with Ms. Thompson? Okay. They might be on mute. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So you started watching YouTube videos. So about, there's a book that I feature on here every now and then called The First 20 Hours. And in the book, and I'll just give a brief overall what the book's about. The book's about saying anybody can learn anything or almost anything within 20 hours. Now, they won't be masters of it, but within 20 hours, the first 20 hours that they learn and practice the fundamentals that they can, you know, pick up, that will be the beginning stages of becoming a carpenter, a basketball player. If you want to be, you know, a chef, I mean, you won't be a chef at the end of 20 hours, but you'll know enough within 20 hours once you learn the fundamentals of a particular craft or skill or whatever you're trying, that you can self-correct and go from there. So in your opinion, what would be, when you started out and you were watching YouTube videos, about how many hours did you spend watching videos until you actually said, well, let me go out and get the materials, and then after that, you know, just put together that first?
Well, there was a... The carpenter that I was watching, her name is Anna White. So she does a lot of free stuff online, just kind of like how E.T. the Hip Hop Preacher, free, you know, speeches online to motivate people. You know, Anna White was doing free courses, or, you know, just telling people how to, like, DIY, how to do this, how to build a table, you know. So I literally watched it in a couple hours, and it was so story that, you know, I literally kind of followed her. I did have a drill at the moment. I didn't have the wood, so, of course, I just pressed pause and went and got the wood and came back to my basement and just started, you know, following the video step by step. So, you know, just after a few more times, like, I learned everything, like, all the tricks. I started to learn the do's and what not to do, you know. I call YouTube University because, if it's anything that you want to learn, like, if you want to be a makeup artist, if you want to build homes, if you want to, you know, be a videographer, if you want to do whatever, all you have to do, instead of, like, surfing Facebook or social media all day, you literally can pull up YouTube or LinkedIn Learning. LinkedIn Learning is a good one, too, where you can watch these videos, and it'll teach you, how to be a master at those skills. And once you start applying it and experimenting, you literally within a week can learn how to build, you know, different things and how to make different things and how to have a skill. So it's literally the foundation and the platform of whatever it is that you want to do. You just have to make the decision and commit to learning those things. And it could take you can learn anything literally on YouTube, you know.
Okay.
You have to have that ambition to do it.
Now, I looked up Anna White, and I just subscribed to her channel. And now, what was the other person? He said something about hip-hop.
E.T. the Hip-Hop Preacher.
Oh, the Hip-Hop Preacher, okay.
Yeah, Eric Thomas.
Okay, Eric Thomas over there. Thomas. Motivation. Oh, Hip Hop Preacher.
Yeah,
I found him. Yeah, I found him. Okay, he's out of Chicago. Hope, you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, yeah. I hit the wrong thing. Okay, I found him as well. All right. Well, you've got a very special talent, Ben. I'm glad you that broken table. I guess was a blessing in disguise. Now, what were you doing before that? Before you got in the woodwork.
Yeah. So I did racial justice work to make sure that babies were born healthy in our community. So I'm the founder of a nonprofit called the National Coalition for Healthy Black Families here in our community. So I worked with United Way. I worked alongside many community leaders. I ran for office, so I was very involved politically in the community. And when the unrest happened, I literally just stepped back and let the young people do the work, you know, the social justice work, and I started building tables as a therapeutic way of, you know, helping our communities.
Okay. Yeah, let me share something with you. Maybe you got some ideas on this. This program, which is It's My House, well, it's got two titles, It's My House and DIY TV, but It's My House, that's how it started. We've been doing this for December the 24th, 10 consecutive years. Here's how it started. I'm in Florida right now, but I have a house in Washington, D.C. So the look 10 years ago, no, actually about 12 years ago, I had 12, 13 years ago, actually, I had a squatter, a house sitter that would not leave the house. Matter of fact, they tried to take the house. So after, it took almost 3 years to get them out. And then I was going to court between, you know, that's like 900 miles between here and D.C. And I was going to court twice a month. It was wearing me out psychologically. So after the case was closed, I took a year to just decompress from all that toxicity of dealing with, you know, that person. And, you know, running me through the system like that. Eventually I won and everything. And they left the property. But then I was thinking, now, why would a person try to take somebody's house? And I thought about that for like a year. And then something told me that, you know, oh, and let me give some background on this person. This person, they had got kicked out of their sister and brother-in-law's house. They couldn't go to any other blood relatives, but they were headed towards the shelter. So I had known this person previously, and I was on my way to Europe in about less than a week. So I said, well, look, if you said, you don't have to pay me any rent, and, you know, just pay whatever your cable bill and, like, you know, whatever you use, and you can pay that direct. So that arrangement worked out for like 2 years. Then until I asked them to leave. So then they, like, so tried to take the house. So I was thinking, now, what would possess a person? What I came up with is that the average person, no matter in the United States and in most Western countries, do not know, they know very little or nothing about woodworking or, case, how to build their own house. I said, but that got in the tiny house. So my question to you is, because I truly believe if you went to the social services office, and, of course, social services is probably not going to allow it, but if those people that were in social services, both men and women, would learn something about woodworking, their life would totally, they would do a 360, or at least a 180, because 360 only goes back where they were. What are your thoughts on that? By just, should everybody learn the basics of woodworking?
So, you know, you think about, you know, before segregation in our United States, before integration, when it was segregation, you know, all we had was our fields. You know, we had agriculture. We knew how to grow our own, you know, our own food. And it's not so much as racially, but before the industrial era, you know, we knew how to do all these things. Our grandfathers knew how to build. Our grandmothers knew how to grow, you know. We lost access to that, the independency of humans and having basic human skills and basic life skills. And I think that woodworking is a form of basic life skills. Gardening is a form of basic life skills that every human should know. And that will definitely change like the person that you were that you allowed to have this space, you know, they didn't have the confidence in themselves to go, you know, create their own themselves. So they're rather
right.
still, you know? and that's the energy that we have, like, you know. And having a home is a basic necessity. Like, it's something that you will still, you will do whatever you can in your power to have a home and shelter. So that's the way that they, that's an unfortunate route they chose to take from you, to try to take from you, which didn't work. But that's how many of our people are moving, is because instead of saying, hey, look, I could teach you how to build a table, and you can sell these tables for at least $1,000 a pop, and you can raise enough money to buy you a house by selling tables, you know? And people don't click like, oh, I can sell this. I can make money off this. I can create a livelihood for myself. I can put a roof over my head. That whole situation of learning woodworking will change somebody's mental well-being. That it changed their physical health. They started checking how they live and how they eat, how they walk, how they talk. Like, those basic necessities is what we as people need in this community to change our lives and to become back independent and not complacent to what somebody else can do for us or taking from somebody else, if that makes sense.
You know, you're absolutely right. I agree with everything you're saying. And that confidence factor is a major one, because in this case, and I've never mentioned that person's name on this podcast in 10 years and probably never will. But it's because they were looking at, I mean, now mind you, once again, I live in Florida. The house is decent. They went, I remember one time I said something like, they went to the police. But they didn't, you know, they didn't bring up no charging. And then they went to court. And the judge filed the case, and the judge threw it out of court. Then they went to neighborhood legal services, and then they got some traction that way. But in, like I said, it took me almost 3 years, but I won. But looking back on it, like I say, they were looking towards, and I'm not knocking government, okay, but a lot of things, a lot of problems can be resolved within ourselves. If we, A, like you mentioned, the word self-confidence, and I agree with you, woodworking, because that gives you the power to create. And you just gave a beautiful example. What if you learn how to look at tables, I think you mentioned, and then sell them for $1,000 a pop? And then, you know, if you need $10,000, all right, do what you got to do. Well, matter of fact, let's run through some numbers. At a table that you might retail at $1,000, let's say you put it on, what do you use as a platform? Facebook Marketplace, Etsy, eBay, what do you recommend for your e-commerce?
Well, I used to do, you know, Etsy and Facebook Marketplace, but, you know, of course I use my website, chiefflameswood.com now, to promote, you know, my social media as well, Instagram, all that. TikTok is a big place. But literally, only put, you know, you put a couple hundred, you know, with the lumber that you use to make it, and because it's your hard-earned, you know, you hand-built these tables. You can sell it for whatever you feel like you want to sell it for, whatever you feel that value that, you know.
Right.
You have power. You have the power of what you choose you want to sell it for, you know. You know, some people, some big entities sell, you know, handbags for thousands of dollars, and people buy it, you know. I can sell a table for thousands of dollars if I wanted to, and if somebody wanted to come buy it, they would come and buy it, you know. So,
right.
That's how you got to look at it, and that's the confidence. And it gets, like you said, it gives you power. It lets you know, I can do this with my hands. Okay, what else can I do with my hands? I can do this also with my hands. So it changes your whole well-being as a person.
Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely right. Now, you started off, and speaking of hands, we got an audio for that. Matter of fact. the story is awesome. And well, now, you have employees now, I believe?
Yes, I have employees. Right now I'm in transition of getting new employees because my building is almost being done, being renovated. So I have a new cohort of students coming from Bradley Tech. So they're waiting for me to open up my doors to bring them in.
Okay. All right. We're going to, you mentioned, because we're working, you do it with your hands. So we're going to plug in, we'll be right back.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him? Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter. As I know here, you're in trouble. Gloria says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day, and God said to Moses, "What's in your hand?" And Moses said, "Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all." He said, "Well, let me use what's in your hand." And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, "Dr. Powell," he said, "I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory." And that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got any
but an old quill pen, but God says write what I tell you to write.
Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, as laid up in the
heart. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are.
Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross. I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, split history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God, always in the majority. So walk with him, and talk with him, and work with him, and speak together, and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night, and God bless you.
All right, we're back with Tonda Thompson. And of CEO, She Slangs Wood. Tonda, how did you come up with that name, She Slangs Wood?
It was a joke on Facebook. You know, one of my friends called me the Wood Slanger, and I was like, hey, you know, my name should be She Slangs Wood. And it was, you know, we were joking at first, but I'm like, you know, that's a really good name. So when I went on the Kelly Clarkson show, and right after I was on the show, I had to immediately trademark the name and get patented so no one would take it.
All right. Well, that was a very smart move and whatnot. Now, dealing with it, the last order we play, for a person that wants to get started in woodworking, what tools should they, a beginner, that we would suggest start with? I guess it depends on the project. Well, you know what? Let's go back to a table. If they want to but simply build a simple coffee table, what tools should they get?
A simple coffee table, you just have a drill, and I would say maybe invest in a pocket hole, a Craig jig, pocket hole jig. That's where you can hide the holes, but that's a little bit more advanced, but it is a form of box joinery that you can start with. I mean, it makes your tables a little bit more sturdier. So just a drill, really, you know, you can get those dimensional lumbers cut at the lumber yards, but a drill is what you really need.
Okay, that's a very good tip. You know, get what you can cut at the lumber yard, people, whatever place you're buying wood from. Let's see, let's go back to the phone line. 813, are you there? Your light's on. 813. Okay. War, Tennessee. All right, their lights on, but they could be muted. They're just listening.
Hello.
Yeah. Delmar.
Yeah, I'm through 813. It's a strange number because it's not my number. But sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah, Delmar. Any questions that you want to ask our guest, Tonda Thompson? She Slangs Wood.
No, I think she's just about done a great job explaining herself. Thank you. Of course she can. Thank you.
All right. And she is available to travel to, I guess you do workshops when you travel. What do you know? If people want to fly you in, explain what you do when you fly. Besides the motivation and stuff, but the hands-on stuff.
Absolutely. I'm contracted to come out to, maybe if you have a wood shop, or I've done stuff in parks. Like, I teach how to build a bench in a park as a community building type of thing. All families at cemeteries, how to make a memorial in honor of their family, like a memorial bench. So the work that I do is community building in the same sense. So just bring me out. If you have a location, I'll come in and I'll teach those class with what we have at the moment.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I'll be calling you all fair about that. Because I'm with you. I think woodworking is a life skill. And if I was king of the United States, which I'm not, particularly in the educational system, grades 1 through 12, starting off with those blocks, it will be like it's mandatory to take English and all that. Every year, mandatory that you have to take woodworking. And if you look at the Amish and Mennonite communities, another community that's related to them called the Hutterites here, mostly in Canada, they just go, the Amish just go grades 1 through 8. Then they learn a family business, but woodworking, particularly among the men and a good number of the women, make their own furniture, Amish furniture. They make all kinds of stuff. They're woodworkers. From generation to generation to generation. So, but for some reason, woodworking is not a mandatory course for people, particularly even if you go to a private school. They do have shop classes, in my opinion, it's not organized that way. Tyler, what are your thoughts on that? Woodworking is a mandatory educational class.
So here, I went to a technical school and, in the first, month as a freshman, I learned how to, cut, wood in the shop. And it wasn't, something that I should have had more time, learning how to build a project or whatever. And I would have had more of a base with woodworking. But when you go to suburban schools, they do have, shop classes. They do teach, young people the basics of woodworking, but not too much within, black communities, black and brown communities. They don't have that pretty much anymore. And that's where we lack that aspiration of I can do this, I can build this. And that goes into so many avenues. When you have that confidence that you can build something, you can build anything, you can do anything. So I think that is a thing that needs to be taught. Starting as an 8-year-old, the third graders can learn how to build basic tools. They can learn how to, do basic joinery pretty much.
Arts and craft, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about, have you run across any, a lot of churches have all kind of ministry, singles ministry or shut-in ministry, prayer ministry, all kind of ministry. Even a ministry for the homeless, but the ones I run across from the homeless, whatever ministries church is called to do, they do. Some of them, their homeless ministry might be, all right, get them in here for Bible study, then feed them. Others, come get, eat what you want, leave if you want, then we'll have Bible study after that. Some of them go out to, an area where a lot of homeless people might congregate, whatever. But I haven't heard of, there are all kind of ministries and a whole bunch of churches out here, but I haven't heard of a woodworking ministry. Tonda, have you run across that in your travels, circles?
No, but I think you just started something. And it is a therapeutic. It's a form of art therapy. when you're woodworking, and it's therapeutic. Mm-hmm. You basically, you banging stuff, you nailing stuff, like that takes away stress, that takes away the ability that you feel that you lack, that gives you power as a person. So it could be a spiritual thing if you connect the two woodworking. You know, it's
well,
a mental.
Well, I truly believe that because, well, we got Dom on here. He knows all the scriptures like that. But we started a thing called Abiding Faith Housing Ministries. Just focus, you know, mainly on teaching people how to build houses. But the woodworking as a whole is more empowering because, like I said, furniture. He brought up it's a confidence builder. It's a whole lot that can be derived from, and it's an ancient profession.
Mm-hmm.
If you think, I mean, we've worked around the
I have some tools that date back from the 1950s that still work perfectly.
Oh, okay. All right. So, Tana, I don't want to take up too much of time because I know you got a woodwork and we have businesses. So, for people that want to get in touch with you, give us how they can, website and social media.
Our social medias are She Flame Wood. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook, we on Instagram, TikTok, Ashley Slingswood, and you can find me anywhere. If you Google Tonda Thompson, you literally can find anything about me, my whole story of how I got to where I got.
All right. Well, I was running across something, a week or so ago, less than 2 weeks, and wasn't looking for Tonda, even though who Tonda, I never even heard of the name Tonda. Then I ran across one video, and I said, wait a minute, man, let me look up some more stuff. That's why I have to call you up. So I really appreciate you taking the time out and getting here today. And Delmar, if you're still there, you got any questions to ask before we close? Tonda Thompson, Chief Slingswood.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. Thank God, as you say, this woodworking is not high tech; it's basic. And as you were saying about the education, that's where it should always be basic. Unfortunately, we are only being trained for the workforce. That's why I've been in many schools now, have no textbooks, all computers. Of course, the downside of that is when something happens, the computer doesn't work, we are dumb. People stand there with nothing to do, don't know how to think. So basic is where it needs to be. Thank God, thank you, young lady, for doing that. But as this country moves forward, we will have to go back to basic. We'll be forced to go back to basic. This high-tech stuff is not going to hold as they think. It's going to go back to basic. And you're going to be in demand, I promise you. And as for the churches, God help us. We don't all think church about going to heaven. That's what they want to teach us about woodwork. They're too heaven-bound. That's our problem. So thank you for your example of the basic. A word for it, and I can say there's so much in that. As you say, tension relieving, all that confidence, you covered it all right there. But it's basic. And so I was like, we're so highfalutin on education that we've left the basic. And that's why we're so far behind. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Well,
thank you.
Tonda, I've done over 2,400 podcasts. It'll be 10 years exactly on December 24th. And I brought this up last week before you got on here. If I had to pick a Mount Rushmore of people that I've interviewed for podcast topics we've covered in the last 10 years, we're over 2,400. Including this one today, and we record all of these and then archive them so you can, the link I sent you, you can play it back on now to send it to other people. You're on my Mount Rushmore.
Thank you.
One of the top four, because what you were talking about is simple. Practically anybody can do it. You can do it on in any country. And it's an ancient technology that still works, which is woodworking. So thank you for coming on. And like she,
thank you. I appreciate
it. As many times you want to, because we got going back 10 years. So so you gave your phone number and a website.
The website is sheslangswood.com, and the phone number is 414-708-8599.
I can fly you in. I know a few places we can fly you into, because the confidence thing. That's what people really need, you know, to give a paradigm shift. So thank you, Tonda. Thank you, Dhamma, all listeners. On that note, we're going to wrap it up today. Everyone, the best guest of the day.